Support comes from the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud partner of the public broadcasting stations that keep Coloradans better informed.
Good evening, and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content by and for queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight I'm speaking with Soren Thomas, founding and executive director of Queer Asterisk. Queer Asterisk is a mental health organization with offices in Boulder, Denver, Longmont, and Fort Collins that provides counseling and therapy services. Soren, thank you so much for joining me on Outsources.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm excited to talk about Queer Asterisk, but before we do, I'm actually wondering if we can touch on your own entry point to this work. So you've talked about how Queer Asterisk is kind of creating a sense of home for those who aren't always able to see themselves reflected in their community. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what community and belonging looked like for you personally growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to start when I'm sharing about my story and my entry point into the work that I do with my childhood. So I actually grew up a U.S. citizen in Europe, living between cultures. So when I was in high school, began to identify myself as a third culture kid, someone who was a U.S. citizen, but had never lived in the U.S., and someone who was living in Europe, but wasn't a German citizen or a Spanish citizen. And really my identity was, if you picture a Venn diagram, those intersecting cultures. That was my home culture. And so then as I grew up and started to get to know myself even further, I began to recognize that my sexuality first was very similar, somewhere in between gay and straight. And then later in my master's degree program, recognizing that still further, my gender identity reflected a kind of bridge experience. So not necessarily man or woman, but a non-binary transgender experience. So I think all of those experiences of mine of both belonging in binary cultures and residing in the middle led me to create this, the culture of Queer Asterisk.
Yeah. And so can you talk a little bit more about this? Because Queer Asterisk came about as an idea, right? With some of your peers in while you were in school about creating something that just wasn't out there already yet in Colorado necessarily. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So when I was in graduate school, I had the honor of meeting the first out non-binary person I had ever met. And that's really where my gender identity kind of clicked into place. I didn't know that that existed. And then I went on a journey of myself of socially transitioning and then medically transitioning. And the medical transition process was so dehumanizing and humiliating to me that I thought, what would it be like to create a mental health organization where the practitioners, the professionals, shared some identities as those who were seeking services? And so that was really the birthplace of Queer Asterisk, was a mental health organization by and for queer and trans folks.
Yeah, and I think this is so beautiful, the way that, you know, you're seeing this kind of gap in what exists in Colorado. But really, it seems like to me what you're talking about is how do we build like compassionate, humanizing structures, organizations, you know, systems of in your case, mental health organizations. And I'm curious if you could talk just a little bit more about what is that. You've mentioned the people, so that, you know, the people that work there, their lived experience speaks mm-hmm. to the folks that are accessing your services. Mm-hmm. What else is kind of unique in the way that you have envisioned and built an organization differently that is around this kind of compassion and humanization?
Yeah, I think a large component is the Naropa education of mine, which has its roots in contemplative practice. And by that, I mean this recognition of the basic goodness of every human being and a non-binary approach to relationships and social justice work, that there is not right ways to be, right ways to act, or wrong ways to be and wrong ways to act, but that it's really about relationship and impact and calling people in. And so one of the things that we were working against at our organization as kind of a budding social justice organization is the way in which that work can be still shutting down and isolating to people. And so really using my contemplative background coupled with my counseling skills to be able to confront fear and shame around social justice issues and working, you know, with diversity of clients has really had a huge impact and made us the unique organization that we are.
And you're talking about contemplative practice and this kind of mindful inquiry as it relates to, you know, your organization. I mean, it seems like other mental health organizations would also engage in these questions. And yet, in many cases, it can be that your own experience of that kind of violent or dehumanizing experience could be other folks' experiences trying to get counseling or therapy, things like that. So, you know, in some ways, it's also addressing some of these barriers that exist outside of Queer Asterisk in terms of how difficult it can be to just access those mental health services to begin with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, you've also said you, or, you know, in addition to doing counseling services and being a licensed practitioner, you also do consulting with organizations. I'm just curious how you are walking other organizations through this similar journey that you've done with Queer Asterisk. What have you learned in working with organizations that didn't necessarily do this from the ground up, but are trying to integrate practices to be more compassionate and humanizing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first of all, what I've noticed is that there is a deep desire for change and a uncertainty about how to get there. And that's the difficulty when you've got the dominant narrative has such a strong claim on the culture of an organization. It's very, very difficult to move away from that. And one of the beautiful things about Queer Asterisk is that we started with non-dominant culture. We started with queer culture. And so it's made it a little bit easier for us to sidestep some of the pitfalls of the dominant narrative. Now, we're still navigating those, of course, capitalism and racism and our own internalized transphobia and homophobia. But it definitely was a different place to start, like you said. And so I think, you know, when I'm going into these other organizations, the first place I start is just sharing with them my understanding of the system that we've inherited of privilege and oppression, and that there's no escaping it, that we're all in it. And that really sets the stage for what we're talking about when we talk about a specific marginalized group like queer and trans folks. And then I talk more specifically about the queer and trans experiences and that landscape. And finally is really a call to action and how everyone can be a part of moving away from binary and linear and boxing people in, and how we can all experience some liberation if we unlearn what we've learned about these categories of people or ways that we categorize people and move towards self-definition and, yeah, more expansive ways to identify.
Yeah. It seems, especially in this moment where we are, like seems to be a knee-jerk reaction to striving for like moving right to the action items before doing that kind of unlearning that you're talking about.
Yes.
You know, I wonder if there are key key things that you found, you know, really vital in shifting people's worldviews or perspectives around how to approach this work before discussions of solutions even begin?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I just start out with not answering any of those questions. And so first, I'll just start off by saying, I think one of the ways that I see this happen a lot right now for folks who are trying to be more trans inclusive is implementing a pronoun policy. That's what everybody wants to do right now. And, you know, the intention is so beautiful of inclusivity, and yet it is not enough to, you know, have a pronoun policy and then that doesn't equate being inclusive of trans folks and doesn't address all the complexity there. And so I think, first of all, just immersing people into the complexity of the issues and that it's not so easy as what's right and what's wrong, but really that we're all in this together and that it's complex and that it's deeply problematic lends itself to people actually not asking so many of those questions. You know, how do I do this? What do I do in this situation? And then when folks ask that, I gently bring them back to, first of all, what do they already know about relationships? So we have a cis kid bullying a trans kid. What do we do? Well, you probably know a lot about kids bullying other kids, and just start with that, what you already know. And then growing from there, just really addressing relationships and the complexity of intent and impact and just how relationships deepen through trust, and that no two relationships are the same, and therefore no two ways of approaching relational conflict could possibly be the same.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and I'm talking with Soren Thomas, founding and executive director of Queer Asterisk, a mental health organization in Colorado. So I think you've done just such a beautiful job of kind of communicating the kind of underlying values of what you're trying to do with Queer Asterisk. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the services that Queer Asterisk provides, and can you contextualize that a little bit within COVID? Because, you know, what's happened over the past, you know, 9 months has really shifted ways that people are able to access services, community, relationships, some of the fundamental things that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. So we provide three primary services. First is counseling services. So that's individual, family, relationship, group therapy for folks as young as 4 years old into elder years. We also provide educational trainings, mostly to professional organizations in the mental health field, medical field, also schools, and really anybody who invites us into their organization. But since my background is mostly counseling and education, I tend to work with those organizations most. And then finally, we offer community programs. These are places where anyone who identifies with queer culture is invited to share space. And some of our most popular groups are Queer Conversation, have a writing group, usually have some form of art group. And again, that's just to, you know, kind of address that the majority of spaces are dominated by cis, white, heteronormativity, you could call it. And so it can be a reprieve for folks to join community programs with folks who share similar identities. But I'll also say that the cool thing about our community programs is that while we acknowledge most people who come to our groups identify with the word queer, there's still a lot of diversity within our community and lots of intersecting identities. So there's also a lot of difference that shows up, and that's really exciting. But to go back to your question, How have our services shifted because of COVID? First of all, I would say that more people than ever before are reaching out to our organization for clinical services. And for all the reasons you can imagine, isolation, anxiety, depression, increased substance use. So we have seen a 500% increase in client referrals since the start of COVID.
500%.
500%. And everything that we're doing now is virtual. Since I think it was, you know, middle of March, we were very fortunate to have a telehealth platform already in place, and we're able to switch everything from our offices to the telehealth office, so to speak. And the other way that our services have been impacted, I would say, is organizations have less time and energy for these kinds of trainings, and that's okay. You know, hospitals are very busy right now. Schools are very busy right now. And then finally, with community programs, I would say that there are some things that are missing. You know, we used to have dance parties. We used to have clothing swaps. We used to be able to meet and experience each other in person. And while we're doing the best we can over Zoom, it isn't quite the same. But we do still get to meet, converse, see each other. And I really think that everybody's been making the best of all of these services, moving to an online platform.
Yeah, I think community can be such a fraught concept for queer identified folks just to begin with. And then, you know, you introduce something like COVID, and, you know, in so many ways, it can really amplify and exacerbate what's already going on. Outside of these community programs, you know, I just wonder how else you're supporting folks, and especially queer identified folks, in connecting, in feeling a sense of belonging to communities at a time like this.
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is offering employment to queer and trans folks. And that was always a part of our mission and vision, was to offer employment to queer and trans folks. But we didn't always have the resources for that as a new organization, a young growing organization. And we have gotten to the place where we can offer full-time employment now to, I think we have 7 folks on staff. So that's pretty exciting. But then the other ways, of course, you know, I'm thinking about social media. Honestly, I don't have social media personally, so I'm not a part of that part of the Queer Asterisk community. But I do know that my co-directors work very hard to create a sense of community over Instagram and Facebook and those other ways that people are connecting that aren't so, you know, maybe focused as coming to an hour and a half queer conversation or writing group, but where you can kind of pop in and out or consume, you know, some of the brilliant things that are shared and posted.
I imagine some listeners are thinking, like, I would love to connect with what Queer Asterisk is doing, you know, whether it's the community programs, you know, maybe even accessing services. What is the best way for people to, you know, to engage, to find out more, to sign up for things that Queer Asterisk is doing?
Yeah, well, I think it's very similar to what we were just speaking about. Depending on the level of involvement that someone is choosing, they can join us on social media. You can also go to our website, which is queerasterisk.com, and we have all of our community programs listed on our website there. We also have a newsletter that we put out once a month that shares what we're up to and includes some of those community programs. And if folks are looking for counseling or peer mentorship is either a supplement or an alternative to counseling services. They can reach out on the website through the Contact Us page, and they will get connected to either a peer mentor or a counselor that way.
Yeah. you know, going back to just what Queer Asterisk is doing, I know the other thing that I think I'm sure feels very salient to folks right now is the real vital need to address things like anti-Black racism, things like white supremacy culture. I wonder how Queer Asterisk is engaging those questions as well. You touched on, you know, interrogating white cis heteropatriarchy, you know, those types of things. How do you see Queer Asterisk engaging in those intersections as well when it comes to supporting queer folks of color?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, one of the most powerful pieces of advice that I received from a mentor early on with regards to hiring, especially in our hub is kind of in Boulder, Colorado. And what she said to me was, wait for the folks that you need to hire that are representative of your community. And for us, we get a lot more cis white assigned female at birth applicants than any others. And so for, you know, every number of those applicants who are qualified to hold off and wait for someone who's more representative of the community at large. And so our hiring practices have shifted. Unfortunately, that was pretty early on, shifted from that point. And we have a really diverse group of individuals at Queer Asterisk, everywhere from the director level to the counselors and interns, and also, you know, practicum students and volunteers. And I feel like that's, you know, one of the biggest ways to shift, again, the culture of an organization is who is part of the organization, whose voices and perspectives are seen and heard. So that's had a huge impact on the work that we're doing. We also are in the process of consulting ourselves with organizations with regards to, you know, racism at our organization. That's a big step we've been able to make recently. And, oh, and partners, partnerships. I think that's another big one. So there is a collective in Denver, Element of Discovery, Therapists of Color Collaborative, actually. We're partnering with them to offer special programming for queer and trans people of color. And then we've had a couple of other partnerships, and I'm really looking forward to those continuing as well, more on the side of offering educational trainings that don't just focus on, you know, that very narrow piece of diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts for queer and trans folks, but also include race, ethnicity, religion, so on and so forth. So, yeah, just recognizing that while, you know, we can have a focus on queer and trans experience, we can't, like, not include all the intersecting identities.
Yeah, I so appreciate that. And I, as we come to the end of our conversation this evening, I wonder if there's anything else you want to share with our listeners, anything that we might not have had the chance to talk about yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I would just say that some of the gems of our vision here at Queer Asterisk are that everyone has gifts, and I feel very passionate about the unique gifts of the queer and trans community and what we have to offer the larger community. And another thing is that we're all in this together, and we have a system that is pretty flawed with regards to, you know, systemic oppression and privilege, and that we have to make difficult choices, all of us, to engage and not shy away from it. And if we're all doing that, if we're all acting in small ways and large ways to interrupt heteronormativity or normativity in general, then we really do have a chance of making a change here. So just want to call in everybody, to be a part of this.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. I'm Sean Kenny, and I've been speaking with the founding and executive director of Queer Asterisk, Soren Thomas. Soren, thank you so much for joining me on Outsources tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For more information on Queer Asterisk and their services, go online to our website at news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. Once there, you can listen to the recording of this and other Outsources shows. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about tonight's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Summer showers in my hair were winter.